The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
Thank you very much. Morning, everyone. Morning, everyone, participating on Zoom. And thank you very much. Thank you, Roshi, for allowing us to share this here. And before I start, it's wonderful that I could in this new Zendo. Congratulations. Yes, especially after going through this many, many months of uncertainty. And I hope all your families and friends are doing well. So thank you. As you are stepping into this new endeavor, this new place. I believe it was in 2012 that I was finally able to see Kinkei-san. Correct me if I'm wrong. Just nervously stepping into the U.S. Zendo to meet this wonderful, you know, I heard a lot about Enkyo Roshi. At first, in 2006, when I went to visit Maizumi Institute in Montague, Massachusetts, when that was right after Bonnie Glassman, but this news article was in the Japan Times. I clearly remember. So that was a year I came back to my hometown to help my teacher, my father. And I found this article where Bonnie was saying, any Japanese students are welcome to practice and witness Zen peace makers. And then that's why I heard about Enkyo Roshi, the Yoku Roshi, starting this amazing community back then. And it took me many years afterward to finally start visiting. And then it's been 10 years since I settled in North America, 8 years since I moved down to California. And only finally this year, I'm now able to travel a little bit more freely after I resigned Long Beach Buddhist Church, which is a non-denominational Buddhist community. And my colleague, Dokan, Sokan-san, Taiga-san for the International Center, as they are putting a lot of energy to be reconnected with this, all the sanghas and communities. I had an honor. I was able to sort of join this team. So I'm here as part of their team. And also I have to mention, this time, Reverend Kosai Ikeda, who is a Tokuhaku Gyoshi, who was supposed to be dispatched for transfer, sent over from Sotoshu in Japan. Wonderful teacher, because I remember him from the days in AH, I was a trainee. Unfortunately, he could not make a trip due to the pandemic. It's very strict in Japan still. So I'm also hoping that I can share part of his message. He'll be sharing his message on Zoom on May 12th from 6 p.m. Pacific time, which will be 9 p.m. here. It'll be about an hour long talk. So I hope you can join us on Zoom. Now, thank you for the introduction, Howard. I have been serving for the community in North America for, as I said, for the last 8 years. But prior to that, I had a chance to support my own community temple in Japan as both a vice abbot and abbot for a very short period of time after my teacher passed away. But I learned what it means to serve the community. I work for the organization of Sotoshu while working for this small local community. I'm in the process of revitalizing the second community, putting a lot more diversity energy. And that's one big role that we assume. While we go to the monastery, we learn certain forms. Sotoshu, Eheiji, Sojiji, or any training monasteries, and we learn these basic forms that they teach us. Then we go back to our community temple and we think, okay, I think I'm ready, only to realize that we're not ready at all. Because there's a community thing. Just like how you are teaching me how to bow in this community, and this community has such diverse, subtle expressions. And we go to a community hall of these small villages. I come from a very rural community, cluster village, valleys coming together as a town. So each valley's villages you visit, they have a slightly different rules. So that's something I get to learn after. So today what I'd like to share is something that I experienced, and it comes as a question form. So I'd like to ask you, it's more like a quiz. But before, this is, like I said, this is an auspicious year for us Soto Shuri priests. 1922, exactly 100 years ago from that, this year, the first Japanese-American temple was built. It's called Zenshuji Soto Mission by Reverend Hosen Isobe, and started from the second floor of the members' house. And that's how it started, and it's been exactly 100 years. And needless to say, many decades have passed since it penetrated, went beyond the community, ethnic community, across North America, flourishing through various lineages and communities. So we're hoping to meet both as many leaders of the Western Zen, of North American Zen communities, and get to know them. I suppose we're going to develop more friendship. And that's the main intention of this trip. So I hope we can recognize this year. And as we move on to the next century, of course, counting from that particular year, the initial temple is built, we're hoping to sort of strengthen the independence of North America while building this fair partnership. Friendship. And it requires a tremendous amount of commitment for ours, but also sort of it's hoping that it can be an enjoyable process. I'm having fun, so it's been a fun process. Now, I would like to sort of share this present. I remember with the village Sendo, we went through this registration of this temple for a special temple. Komyo-san. The temple name, the mountain name. I remember sharing a little bit. And what we do, we sort of kind of review. I wonder how many of you are familiar with these two crests. This one over here is a crest. I'm sorry, over here is for the Sojiji Monastery, where Maizumi Roshi came through, representing Dogen. Keizan Zenji's tradition. And this is a symbol of the Eihachi, Dogen Zenji's tradition. So, along with Shakyamuni Buddha as a teacher, we honor, we respect Dogen Zenji and Keizan Zenji. So that's something we always sort of try to share. And you do wonder, what does it really mean to have Shakyamuni Buddha and these two founders? Because often tend to be a symbolic thing. And then we kind of know it, but then it's hard to sort of digest it thoroughly. How many of you are familiar with Dogen Zenji? Okay. Thank you. How many of you are familiar with Keizan Zenji's experience? I usually ask this question, and of course, almost everybody raises their hands with Dogen Zenji. But when I ask about Keizan Zenji, I see, there's 10%, if that's good, maybe a little less. Keizan Zenji's, if Dogen Zenji is the one who went all the way to Song Dynasty to learn the Shakyamuni Buddha's direct teaching. Keizan Zenji is one who respected, who truly observed his teaching. And he didn't only share, spread the Dharma, he put a lot of energy training the students. And these students went to all corners of Japan to bring this practice to multiple traditions, existing faith cultures, which was already there, which I'd like to share a little bit. So that's how all these traditions. My particular temple had, it was a Shingon esoteric Buddhist temple, built in mid-700s. Then, as time went by, it started to shrink. It started to go a little bit down. And then in 1500s, the students, the lineage of Keizan Zenjin students came, Kinshitsu Kaiyon Daiyoshi, and he rebuilt this community as Soto Zen. So we honor the Buddha of Shingon Buddhism, along with Shakyamuni Buddha, Dogen Zenji, and Keizan Zenji, which is really typical for many Japanese temples. Around the time of my grandfather's, a little bit before, there was a movement where this new, you know, researches, Shakyamuni Buddha's words, it's a movement to go back to the pure form, pure teaching of Buddhism. Because now it's suddenly got available through this more collective interfaith movement. And my grandfather was among such people. And he wasn't, of course, the only one. It came with a little bit of a critical thinking about the existing way, that conventional way the Soto has been, like, or other schools. And when I came to North America, I felt this purity, the aspiration to come back to that pure form practice. I feel so involved in with the pioneer generations that I truly feel indebted to. Hakuyo Maizumi Roshi, Shinju Suzuki Roshi, Daimin Katagi Roshi, Kogunshino Roshi, and this sincere form of practice, Zazen, flourished. If Dogen Zenji went to China and brought this pure form of practice, he didn't call it Zen, let alone Soto Zen. It was the teaching of the Buddha. And only after Keizan's era, we started to call this Soto Zen. If we compare Dogen Zenji as a strict, like, father figure who brings us integrating this vertical, like, connection with Buddha, grounds us, centers us, wake us up. The person of the verification of practice and enlightenment. We compare, describe Keizan Zenji as more like a mother-like figure who embraced diversity, adapted to different communities, different styles, existing faith cultures even. So, you know, what we learn in the monastery, along with the form of the spirit of Dogen Zenji, especially since I went to Eihei, but when I come back to the community temple, we get more exposed to the spirits of Keizan, to adapt to this way. So, along with that spirit, now that I have a chance to travel to different parts of the U.S., it was that particular mindset I came here and to explore more. Now, I'd like to share with you a little quiz. I wonder how many of you are familiar with the statues. So I hope you can see, this is the first image. I just let you know, this is not Shakyamuni Buddha. Anybody can tell? Well, the clue is he's holding this pot. It has a medicine in it. So it's a medicine Buddha. the image is a medicine. And the medicine Buddha is a central image of my home temple. So every time we offer sutra, we dedicate the sutra service to medicine Buddha. Om koro koro sendari ato iso. The mantra for the medicine Buddha. I grew up chanting this sutra. And I wonder how many of you this statue. Sorry, here you go. Amitabha Buddha. Amitabha Buddha. Of course, Amitabha Buddha is a Buddha of Shiraban Buddhism. Right in front of the temple ground, I grew up in, there is a pond called Amitabha, the pond of Amitabha. So I go out to school and there's a pond of Amitabha Buddha. So we pay respect. Then we have this image, this statue of Dainichi Nyorai. I believe in English it's Maha Vairochana. Vairochana. It's a central Buddha of Shingon Buddhism. Then I wonder, have you been to Japan or Japanese temples? Do you recognize this? Like very muscular figure? That's Kongo Rikishi. Let me check. Try to find the name in original. Kongo Rikishi. Vajrapani. Vajrapani. The one who drives away the enemy of Buddha Dharma. At Sotozen Zenshuji Temple that I work close by, we have a sensei called Toho Sensei. He's an American football player. He's very strong. And so he's like that. He's got a food. And because my community always work, you know, following the Shingon school, that Kukai Kobo Daishi is another figure very well known in Japan, but maybe not so much in North America. And it's an interesting one. It's hard to see. Here you go. It's the fox. It's all a statue of foxes. They're the retainers of a goddess called Dakini. Dakini's. And one of the big Sotozen, well, it used to be a training temple. I heard it's not a training temple anymore, called Toyokawa Inari, which is very close to where I grew up. Worshipped Dakini, goddess Dakini. And because of that, we have fox everywhere. And we pay respect to this place. And of course, in every corner of the villages, towns, we have Kushiti Garuma, Ojizo-sama. The Bodhisattvas who made a vow to stay in the world of suffering. Very close to us. And also, we have such figures as Sarasvati and Zaiten. Who dwells in the lotus pond. And so we have a lotus pond now nearby. Unless this is where it is. By the way, this is the image of Dakini fox. She used to be one of the Hindu gods. Her name was adopted to Buddhism. She converted to Buddhism in the story. And the one who converted her was Daikokuten. If you know some illustration of Japanese seven deities of good fortune, he's among them. The other name of his is, he's another Hindu god. Hindu god. Mahakala, which is another name for the Shiva of Hinduism. I just want to mention one. Everyone's favorite. As we chant Heart Sutra, we mention Avalokiteshvara, Bodhisattva of the compassion. And I also have to show this. It's a very gentle figure. But then we have another one who looks very hungry. うどうみょう。Akaranasa. Yes, thank you. But he's actually a manifestation of Mahabharata. So it kind of makes us think a little bit. Like, I'm sorry. You can see a little closer. I think this would be, I'll make the last one. On the left is Manjushri Bodhisattva. He usually sits in the Zendo. Here you go, Manjushri Bodhisattva. On the left. And then the wisdom. And then next to him, next to the Manjushri is a Samantabhadra. The Samantabhadra. Likewise, the one with wisdom and compassion. But he is also known in the Lotus Sutra as one who supports the women teachers, specifically women teachers of awakening. So in Japan, it attracts the worship of all the women teachers and practitioners. Such is the figures I grew up around with. So when we chant sutras, toward the end, we extend the merit of the practice. We go, all Buddha throughout space and time, all honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, mahaprajna paramita. Of course, there are many translations. This is sort of what runs through my mind, because that's what I grew up with. Different expressions, different faces, different qualities of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, which we all innately possess inside us, inside a community, inside a Sangha, and inside a Mahasangha in North America. And it's not like we know about this in full detail. We're not academic. But what it does to us, someone who just dwells in town witnessing this on a daily basis, is this. This is the main topic I wanted to bring. I wonder if you've seen this. Well, you know, if you talk about Japan, it comes with animation. Well, I have to tell you, it's not like other exciting animations like Dragon Balls. Well, although Dragon Balls derived from the story, the tale where the monk travels to India to acquire the scripture. So in the story of Dragon, we have wicked ones turning into a guardian. So, you know, this basis of culture has surprisingly more connection with this basis of what we cherish in Buddhism. Now, in Anpanman's case, the story is a little bit more simple. So as you can see in the center here, he is called Anpanman. What Anpan means, bread filled with sweet bean paste. So I think you can sort of think of it more like a chocolate croissant as in it. And he has all these figures. Different personalities. There's one relatively short-tempered, but has strong sense of justice. There's a different one. Another one's very calm. Inside of this picture is a bad people, and a biking one, and its assistant. So all of them are in the same picture. Of course, it's a children's show. But Anpanman does is he travels around. Whenever he finds someone in trouble, he just goes straight to the person, helps them out. And at least once in every episode, he finds someone who's hungry. And what he does is he takes out a portion of his head and then gives it right to him. So when I saw it, it was a little bit of a shock for us. But it's because it happens in every episode. So such is the character of Anpanman we we get witness, we watch one of the episodes. It's kind of like Sesame Street, I guess, in the US, when you're small. The creator of this character, Takashi Yanagisawa, he says, the Anpanman is an image that is derived from the idea of bodhisattvas, the Buddhas. When in the United States, we have words like justice, which is very a strong word here, in this very diverse community, diverse in terms of sense of value, cultures, religious backgrounds. When Anpanman executes justice in episode, Mr. Yanase says he knows that he might get hurt. So in this episode, he doesn't always win. He gets defeated occasionally. It's a lesson for our children. So Mr. Yanase says justice in his idea is not something when the strong hero beats the enemies. Justice for him is when the most ordinary person does commit themselves, knowing that they might get hurt, and still do this. And when the person doesn't mind it at all, doesn't have these fears or anxiety bothering at all. That's justice. That's how he explains. That's how he depicts Anpanman. And when he says Anpanman helps people, not because it's his job or he has to, because that's how the story is said, or is he supposed to, the Mr. Yanase depicts him as someone who cannot help this. In Buddhism, of course, we call this bodhicitta, the Buddha body mind. Anpanman does this because it's his life itself. If you have seen Soto Zen practice, very intense training, a little mentality, and I understand sometimes people think Japanese people are hardworking, dedicated. I think that's a compliment, but sometimes a little bit workaholic. And I see that myself. Yes, I think so too, as well. But, it tends to come with a sense of self-sacrifice that we make this much effort. And there's something that gets stuck, bothers us. Mr. Yanase, the creator of Anpanman, says, although Anpanman takes out a portion of his head and he loses power and therefore he loses, but he says it's not a self-sacrifice. And the reason why he thinks that Anpanman is not making a self-sacrifice is there's not a slightest notion in the story, in his mind, that he's doing it. He's taking out something from him. There's not a slightest notion that of being bothered or being finding worrisomeness. He just does it as a matter of fact. If you see the show, it goes in one smooth sequel. So you see it. And it's really natural how he takes out a portion of his head. Again, that's because that's his life. He cannot help it, but do it. And that's the sort of mindset we carry as each bodhisattva's practice. And as we all know, we sit zazen to sort of free ourselves from this dualistic thinking of us and them. Dogen Zenji, of course, says, if we have this sense of boundary of us and them, it's really hard to do this action from Anpanman. The compassion that we talk about, embracing different, helping out different friends, like you can see in this picture. It's a very cute, beautiful picture. But what Anpanman, you know, shows us is that it's not just gentleness. It's not that, of course, it comes with a pure heart, but it requires something a little bit more. We have a word in Japanese. Sorry, I have one Japanese letters. Oh, here you go. One, this one says pronounces kaku, and this one's ko. Kakubo. And kakubo, usually when I translate it, means, well, will you make up our mind? Kakubo shimasu. I'll make up my mind. Or determination. Interestingly, these two letters, if you look closely, have the same meaning. Kakubo. Both meaning awaken. Awaken. It's interesting how they use these two letters to express determination, making up the mind. And that's the kind of thing the story of Anpanman, or Mr. Yana says we need to be compassionate, to embrace diversity. I personally did intercultural communication as a bit of a study in my college in Sofia, Tokyo, which was a Catholic school. So I got exposed to Catholic education. And it's a beautiful thing. Diplomacy, building friendship, making world peace. And of course, it has to be a fun, beautiful experience. Yet, it has to come with readiness to get hurt, readiness to be overwhelmed with this kaku. And I think that's the kind of message because now Masato Shu, like to sort of share, especially as we're stepping over the threshold to the next centuries. And along with that line, I'd like to share a portion of message of Reverend Kosai Ikeda. As I said, we'll be sharing a message on May 12th. I had an honor to translate his message. So I'm one of the lucky ones to get to know the message. So it's part of his message. Can you wish happiness to those who drop bombs in your town? Can you wish happiness to those who threaten the life of your family? Can you forgive those who hurt your most beloved child and wish happiness to them? In our practice, we chant, we recite, may this merit extend universally to all. We say all, and that includes the ones we hate. Still chant, extend. The ones who hate us, the ones who sometimes we cannot possibly forgive. We extend the merit to all, and not to that convenient portion of all, which in our notion consider all. So this practice will not allow us to deceive ourselves. We encounter hardship like this pandemic, illness, your family, you have experienced the hardships of the cold weather, difficulties. It's something that's beyond our power, but it's not the cold that affects us. How we live our life is not a matter of if there is the cold weather. It's the matter of ourselves. Reverend Ikeda says, this is a word he directed to himself when he was going through a very challenging moment a few weeks ago, which I believe you will share. What you bear on your shoulders would not make you a fool. What you bear on your shoulders would never block your path. Fear your own mind, that wants to make you fall. Fear your own mind wanting to stop this walk. Now, with this message read, I'd like to share the message from the head priest of Soto Shu to be addressed in April this year. A message from the head priest of Soto Shu in 2022. We are now faced with many difficulties and uncertainties, and our way of life is being questioned. The global spread of the novel coronavirus has resulted in the loss of many precious lives, and people are in deep trauma. International conflicts and civil wars, social problems such as poverty, discrimination, inequality, bullying, and incidents that take lives, as well as natural disasters and global environmental changes that have been occurring frequently in recent years, have brought us about a crisis of survival for us all. What kind of way of life should we, who live by the teachings of the one Buddha and two founders, strive for? The Buddha taught us to live with wisdom and compassion. Wisdom is the ability to realize the truth of life, which is animated by all things. Compassion is the ability to eliminate suffering and lead people to peace of mind with hearts of infinite empathy. With wisdom and compassion, we can be tolerant and accept each other's different standpoints. Keizan Zenji told us to accept the sorrows and sufferings of others as if they were our own and to live in harmony with one another. This year, let us continue to deepen our human relationships by sharing, supporting, and caring for one another with cooperation, one of the Bodhisattva's four embracing actions. Dogen Zenji stated, although this Dharma is abundantly present in each person, it isn't manifested without practice. In this way, he admonished us to carefully apply his teachings to our daily lives. Let us all join hands with the Buddha and proceed with the practice of the Bodhisattva by being familiar with Zazen and praying together to live peacefully so that no one in the world is left behind. In 2024, 700th anniversary of Keizan Jōken Zenji, the founder of Dai Honzan Sojiji, will be celebrated. I hope that you will appreciate this precious opportunity to experience this Dharma connection and that you will deepen your faith together with us. Homage to Shakyamuni Buddha. Homage to the great ancestor Joyo Daishi Dogen Zenji. Homage to the eternal eminent ancestor Josai Daishi Keizan Zenji. Gassho. April 1st, 2022. Ishizuki Shugo, head priest of the Soto Shu. I would like to conclude this talk finally by sharing this short article that I found right before I left Los Angeles for this trip. It's a message from Reverend Shundo Aoyama Shundo, the first director of Sojiji Monastery. It's a nun. And this is the message she shared. So it's a rough translation, so please forgive me. Message as my will to the young monastics. The practice of gratitude. Shundo Aoyama, Seido of Sojiji Head Monastery. Last fall, Ishizuki Zenji kindly asked me several times to consider assuming the position of the Seido. And I shamelessly accepted the position, the offer, despite where I was standing in terms of health. The last several years, I suffered a series of serious illness. And also being at age 90, I feel ashamed and humbled when I think about how I could be useful when there's only so little that I can do about my health. Dr. Kyuki Ota, the professor of Komazawa University, known for his study on Yogacara, once said, "Buddhism talks about cause and effect, but we can only do so much. We can only have so much say regarding the cause, and we can only do so little effects. All we can do is to accumulate good causes, following the guidance of good teachers, and following the doctor's advice, without asking myself about the consequences, effects. I've been telling myself to do whatever I can as a practice of gratitude. Blessed with this life throughout the serious illness at my age, I find each occasion where I can convey my message to the young monastics as the occasion where I can meet my will. And this deeply touches my heart." Shakyamuni Buddha awakened to the universal and eternal truth. Since then, over 2,500 years passed, and countless number of sages and ancestral teachers attained the teachings through their bodies and minds, giving their whole life to the way, and transmitted them through their jinkaku shoujo, through their characters, through their personalities, life, all the way to right where we are standing today. I sincerely wish that this flame of Buddha Dharma will remain undistorted and stay strong. She concluded her article with a short poem. "The flame of the Dharma you have lit, humbly and respectfully, I transmit to the next generation." So with that, I'd like to conclude. Okay. Thank you very much for your time and letting us be here. And thank you for your presence and time joining us today. Okay.